Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. I'm drinking a Manhattan. We're still on quarantine. We should probably announce the time we're doing this because it's Saturday and the draft is probably in the fourth round still. So if we talk draft and don't talk about something that happens after that, it's because of that. We got to hang out and watch round one of the draft together, which didn't impact either of our teams. It was still fun to get together and do something sports related. But before we get into sports, we got to do this week in Trump. This one we can't avoid. So Trump has been getting beaten up pretty hard by the press, and he's not reacting to it well. He's getting a lot of heat for what he said about, disinfecting people using UV and using injectable disinfectants. He said that while staring right at Dr. Birx, and then when pressed on it the next day, basically said, "I was just being sarcastic," which I will submit he was not. He was just talking out of his ass as he often does. And the stuff he was talking about is right up my alley when it comes to what I do for my career. I mean, I used to try to sell UV disinfection treatments for surfaces and spaces, not for people. In fact, I used it in your basement once, and we had to put up little monitors that proved that we were not in the area, didn't open the door, or the machine would absolutely shut off because UV in the C range, which is nerd stuff coming, but a more intense UV than you get from the sun, which is UV A and B, is very, very harmful to human cells, like cancer causing. All right, so I've set the stage. I have some pretty strong opinions on this, but I don't want to ramble on.
Yeah, and so before we go into the technical analysis of UV versus human cells,
I
think that this is being really, really blown way, way out of proportion. I think this is the media and everyone who hates Trump taking some dumb thing that he said and just throwing a grenade on it. Now, part of it is, like, at this point, again, we know who and what Trump is. Trump is a guy who, like you said, talks out of his ass. He just goes off the cuff. Dr. Birx gave an explanation that he likes to talk his way through things, which, again, is a nice way of saying he was just talking out of his ass, right? His comment, can we take the UV and is there a way to get that inside the body and do something? It's just like, it's a guy, he doesn't know anything about viruses. He doesn't know anything about virology, biology, immunology. He doesn't know anything about any of the sort of
sanitizing agents.
He doesn't understand it. And when he, you know, he's like, oh, you know, something to disinfect and clean the blood, you know, like, you know, when he's saying that stuff, as soon as I heard it, I said, okay, I know how this sounds, but I knew what he meant, right? I knew that he didn't mean take Lysol or drink bleach or, you know, like inject yourself with some Pine Sol, or you know, eat Tide Pods or whatever. We know that's not what he meant. What he meant was, can we, in the world of science, you know, find a way to take things that act like that and do it inside the body, right? He oversimplified it. It came across really bad, and immediately everybody seized on it. Now, I also saw that in the state of Maryland that they received a number of calls from people that were asking questions about, you know, detergent and, you know, cleaning agents and trying to figure out if this is a good idea. I know your sister even called you about, you know, getting a UV light and how
that was just for a kitchen though.
Okay. Well, still, I think that my biggest thing with Trump has been for a while now, for the last couple of years, is that Trump talks too much. He needs to talk less. Right. And I don't care that he thinks he's the greatest show on earth. He's the president of the United States. and he needs to talk less and allow people who actually study this stuff, who are employed to deal with these sort of things, he needs to let them do their job. That's been my task for him, my complaint about him. And this just reinforces that. I don't think that he's intentionally trying to hurt people. I think part of his thinking, which is a lot of people's thinking, is that there's no one dumb enough out there to drink bleach or take a disinfectant or try to inject themselves with whatever. But the problem is, unfortunately, we've been proven wrong time and time again that there are fucking people out there that are dumb enough to try this stuff. And I don't know if it's necessarily fair to put it on him, because there are really stupid people out there. So you can't sanitize your words to the point where, well, if you say anything, any one stupid person might take it out of context and do something that kills themselves, you know. But yet you see this shit all the time. I mean, every warning on every device that you buy, like you can't even buy clothes without some sort of warning label. Don't wrap this around your neck and then try to hang it in the closet and jump out, because this is how you strangle yourself. Like all these dumb warnings are from where someone tried something really stupid and it probably ended up killing them. So,
or they're afraid of a lawsuit, which is the real motivator for that.
But why are they afraid of a lawsuit? Because someone did it, and they got sued, or someone was killed.
So here's why I'm not giving Trump the same pass you are. I agree
I'm not giving him a pass, right? I'm just saying that I've just come to expect it, and the way to fix this is for him to talk less.
Agreed. But when you say something really dumb, the response should not be, I was being sarcastic to see what your reporters would do. People who are incapable of owning misspeaking are just fundamentally not good leaders and dangerous. If you just can't ever admit you were wrong, and he didn't even have to do a big mea culpa. He could have just said, I was talking to the doctors, I was putting a weird idea out there. I'm not, all the people defending Trump, and I got dragged into the Facebook wormhole a little bit yesterday, are saying, he says flat out he's not a doctor, you shouldn't take him seriously. Then quit giving fucking medical advice or asking stream of consciousness medical questions while you're in front of the world. You look like an idiot. You make us look like idiots, and then to explain yourself with a complete hack defense of, I was being sarcastic to see how you reporters and your fake news, by the way, how you reporters respond, come on. That is not becoming of the office of the president, period, in my opinion.
I fully agree, and, you know, and part of it is, I think, we have to talk about this, and the biggest way to deal with it is there's not a lot that we can do about it right now. And it has nothing to do with the pandemic. It's just there's just nothing we can do. We're not going to impeach him again.
Right.
There's just clearly not enough time. So the biggest thing is you got to vote the guy out, you know. And I think, you know, for me, I'm at a point where all these things that he does on a consistent basis, whether it's lying, whether it's just unnecessarily boasting about something that's not worth boasting about, whether it's, you know, his pettiness, all those sort of things, I just take it into account. I'll remind people, there's no reason, like, I guess my thought process is, I'm not going to beat people over the head with this, because it drags you, whether it's on social media or it's a conversation in person, it just drags you down into this sort of, you know, Neanderthal mudslinging thing where everyone ends up looking like idiots, and people are just, everyone has drawn their line in the sand. Like, see, the thing is, everyone that you're talking to that's defending Trump, their positions are set. They're going to vote for the guy no matter what. No matter what. Like, short of the guy, I at this point, I am not sure what he could do to shift people away from voting for him. Right, like right now, they're so entrenched of their idea of what he stands for, right? That it's outgrown him as a person, right? It's more now. Trump has become a brand. He's become a mindset to the point where that's what they believe in, right? And they feel that anything that it's not supporting of Trump, right, then it must be bad, and therefore they have to fight against it. And they've labeled that as liberalism, progressivism, fake news, the mass media, you know, the fake mass media, all those names that get thrown out there. But it's not that much different on the other side. If you are a liberal, progressive, left, Democrat, whatever you want to call yourself, you hate Trump to the point now where there's nothing that he could do that you will give him credit for. And you want to see him gone at all costs. And anyone that supports him must be stupid, racist, you know, all the things that are associated with supporting Trump, the MAGA movement. And you just have these divides, these lines in the sand that 99% of the U.S. population and probably the world, right, are on one side or the other. And right now, from a voting standpoint, there's a very small percentage of people, right? Less than 1% of the U.S. population that you're trying to figure out what direction that they're going to go, right? And that's the part that the election in November, that's what that's all about.
Well, I mean, you know, I agree. We are extraordinarily polarized. But a couple weeks ago, maybe it was even last week, people were doing this exact same thing about Trump saying he was going to consider pardoning Joe Exotic, a.k.a. Tiger King. And I, on our show, said that was a stupid attack on Trump. So I at least have one example on the show where I saw a dumb, overblown critique of Trump and called it out for that. I see this one being very different because this was about an issue that is, A, much more relevant, and I know this is not shocking news, but I just have a huge problem when someone can say, so when someone lies to your face and you know they're lying and they know they're lying and they just pedal the metal, no more questions, that is just unacceptable for a world leader. And I'm hoping that all this stuff is leading to Joe Biden's team putting together commercials with things like that in it. If Joe Biden's team puts out a Trump wanted to pardon the Tiger King, I'm going to slap myself on the forehead so hard you'll hear it from your house. But putting this together and saying, when you need a leader the most, this is what you got from this guy. It's time for something new, even if that new thing is an old white guy who was in the White House for 8 years. Maybe it's time for something old.
Right. I mean, and Joe Biden's a whole other topic that we can get into a little bit later, because his whole sexual harassment thing is starting to pick up a little bit of momentum, although, you know, for different reasons. But, you know, back to Trump, you know, again, it's important to call him out when he does things like this. I don't think that it should be ignored. I do think that it is being a bit blown out of proportion, but the good thing that is coming out of it, I hope, it's true, what I'm reading is that Trump is going to take a step back from these press conferences. They're still going to happen every day, but he's going to talk less. He may not appear every day. And when he does appear, the appearances will be brief. And I think that that's the right thing. The other part of this is, you know, Trump is who he is. He's going to self-aggrandize. He's going to be petty. He's going to make sure that he gets digs in on the people that he doesn't like, and that everybody knows who he doesn't like and who's not on his side. And that's who he is. I think that that's a bad leader. I think that's bad for the country. I don't think it helps. I don't think that that's the way we want to portray ourselves in the eyes of the rest of the world. But his supporters love it. That being said, I think it's bad. So that's one of the reasons why I'm not going to vote for him. But you know, right now we are in a crisis. We have, you know, people that are sick and dying. We've reached the 52,000 mark of the number of people who have died from the coronavirus. You know, we've got hundreds of people who've contracted it. We have a large number of people that have recovered from it, but there are hundreds of thousands of people who have died from it across the world. And it's something we're still trying to figure out. We don't have a vaccine. We don't have a way to test. We don't have enough tests for it. And we don't have enough ways to figure out who has it or who has had it. So because of all that, those are the sort of things that we need to be focusing on. And it's frustrating that he, because he needs to put himself in the forefront, can't let us focus on that, right? Like that's where it gets frustrating, because I don't want to sit here and have these conversations about him, right? And I try to push past them and I try to push through them, because there's other more important things that are going on around this whole thing that the media should be focusing on, that we should be focusing on, that people should be focusing their energy on, instead of every week having to deal with whatever the thing is that Trump said or did, that he said he didn't do, or that he said is fake news or whatever. It's just, it's so tired that in and of itself has got to be a reason that some people just say, fuck this guy, I'm tired of having to try to keep up with him.
Actually, a Republican friend of mine from West Virginia jumped into the fray yesterday and said, I normally don't even get involved in this stuff. And he avoids politics on social media like the plague, in part because he lives in West Virginia and he's very, you know, he's not a huge Trump guy, but he's surrounded by, but he went off saying, I can't take this guy anymore. Let me ask you a point blank question. If Trump could be out doing rallies in front of large crowds, do you think he'd be doing these press conferences, or is this a substitute?
No, this is absolutely a substitute. I think that this is what he's doing right now is he's trying to present the look and feel of good leadership out there every day, talking about the crisis itself and letting everyone know what's going on, what we're doing. Here's members of the task force. Here's Dr. Fauci. Here's Dr. Birx. So he's doing this because he has to, and that's not wrong. And I'm not criticizing him for it. I'm glad it's happening. I don't like the way it's being executed, but at least it's happening and some information is getting out there. The problem is he's delivering too much of that information. You know,
And disinformation.
Well, okay, fine. But I mean, he's delivering too much of the information. He doesn't understand it. He doesn't have a good grasp for it. I don't care. You know, people want to talk about how smart he is and how he's so brilliant. And he'll tell you that he's a genius with a giant brain. But the reality is that it's the people I want to hear from are Dr. Fauci or Dr. Birx, the people out there who are seeing the numbers, who know what's going on in the hospitals, who know what's going on with the process, with the progress of a vaccine, all the tests that we've been talking about, actual numbers from the CDC, all that sort of stuff. Those are the people that we need to be hearing from. He should just be there to say, everyone, we're working on it. You know, try to stay cool, try to stay comfortable. We'll get through this. You know, we're going to push Congress to get you the money that you need. And in the meantime, you know, here's everyone that's working on it and what they're doing. Go. That's it. That's all you need from him. You know, I mean, but he wants it all to come from him to make it sound like every single thing that's happening is his great idea. He's pulling all the strings and everyone's just doing what he says. Like they're, you know, their medical degrees and years of experience in immunology be damned. This is all Trump. It's all coming from him. He's the great fucking mastermind. And it's just like, you're obviously not, no one's expecting you to be, you know, part of being a good leader is knowing when to delegate.
And so there was some actual harm done when he was prompting the hydroxychloroquine cure, which is now, the studies are not suggesting that it's terribly effective. And of course, people are saying, you're a liberal who hates Trump and you want it to fail. No, I don't. What I don't want people to do is to take a pretty intense drug that has substantial side effects and risks associated with it. And there's people who take it for, among other things, I mean, so it's an anti-malaria drug, but my mom takes it because it apparently is off-label useful for rheumatoid arthritis. So now she's afraid she's not going to be able to get her medicine because everyone's hoarding this stuff because Trump said it looks like it's going to be the cure. Yesterday in the whole fray, some idiot posted a study shows that hydroxychloroquine is having a tremendous effect for curing coronavirus. And I started to click it and then saw it was from glennbeck.com and said, forgive my cynicism, but that's not where I'm going to get my medical advice from. So that's why I'm so bent about this is I'm holding him accountable for exactly what he said and the danger caused by that. So I agree. It's not his fault that someone injects Clorox in their ass, but he's still acting in this way is inherently dangerous.
Yeah, he has a responsibility, and he's got to understand that as the president of the United States, that you just your voice and your words wield a certain amount of power and influence, and that it's better to be more conservative and more cautious with the way that you use that. And you can't just throw things out. You can't just suggest maybe this will work, maybe that'll work.
Right.
And he's that's the part that I don't care if you're a Trump supporter or not, that you have to agree with. And if you don't agree with it, then you can't be a part of the conversation, right? Like you just can't.
It was speech, Steve.
Right. I mean, right. And you also don't understand how that works either. that's just the reality of it. I don't want to sit there and bash on the guy. I don't, because to me, just sitting there and bashing on Trump, I feel like some people, Trump makes a mistake, Trump says something stupid, whatever, and instantly their dicks get hard, their pussies get wet, and they are ready to go oh hell yeah, I got a way to bash Trump. It's just the level of excitement that just comes from bashing this guy. Look, I can't fucking stand him. I can't fucking stand him. I think he's one of the worst leaders I've ever fucking seen. I wouldn't let this guy run a lemonade stand for me. But at the same time, the energy that goes into trying to tear him down, and the way that people try to do it, it can so easily be flipped on its head and directed back at people. They leave themselves open with these bullshit straw man arguments over some of the dumb shit that he says and does. And instead of being able to factually back it up, that it just, again, it causes more fucking problems than it solves.
And again, I agree with what you just said. It's undeniable that, multiple media outlets, CNN being the easiest one to talk about, literally just wait for the next fuck up and pounce on it and occasionally make a bigger deal out of it than they should. And to me, that's what the Tiger King article was. And then when something legitimately serious, like, hey, don't take your medical advice from a guy who thinks Kentucky Fried Chicken is health food, when he says something that's legitimately worth criticizing, CNN has become the boy who cried wolf to a large degree.
I mean, but it's really not.
And that's an example, but
right. I mean, but that's a lot of that's a lot of media outlets that have done this. On the flip side, you have the support his supporters, right, whether it's Breitbart or Fox or OANN
OAN is brutal, dude.
Right. I mean, or Town Hall, wherever you get your news from, that will never criticize him unless he's not. Unless he's off message, right? Unless all of a sudden he starts to go too soft on immigrants, then those media outlets will really get pissed at him. Or if he capitulates too much to Democrats, then those, his supporting media outlets, whether it's Fox or Breitbart or whatever, then they'll, that's when they criticize him. And that's just, that's one of my biggest issues with media across the board. I got a good friend, that I appreciate and love very much. And, I was trying to have a conversation with him and I brought up a point to him. We were having a political conversation. I brought up a point and he's like, well, I've never heard that. And I'm like, okay, well, it's easy. It's something that you can easily look up. Well, I don't get any, that hasn't been said across any media outlet that I get my news from. And I'm like, okay, that
translation,
that statement alone should tell you that there's a fucking problem. Right. Anyone who's getting their media, their news information from limited sources based off of their political beliefs, I can no longer have these conversations with you. Right. Because you're clearly not objective. You don't want to be objective. You want to say you're objective. Right.
Right.
You want to say that you're objective and you want to tell me how, I'm looking at this from every different angle. Right. But if you're only getting your news from one place and one source, right, and it's only just reaffirming what you believe and what you want to hear, then you're full of shit. You're not objective. You don't want to be objective. You want to be propped up in your belief, and you want to hear that over and over again. It's the whole definition of a fucking echo chamber. And the same thing in the people on the left, right? If you're only getting your news source from from The Guardian or The Washington Post or The New York Times or CNN or MSNBC and all those. That's the only place you get your information from, right? And then you just say, and you take that as gospel every time, and you're not willing to hold those entities accountable for when they fuck up or when they overemphasize something or they completely ignore something, then again, you're not objective either. The problem is that people less and less even care, right? More and more people are just like, fuck you, I know I'm not objective and I shouldn't be. Why should I be? Because blah, 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 blah. Right? And it's just like, and there's fewer and fewer people that you can actually have a conversation with when it comes to objectivity and looking at something from all sides and trying to figure out its overall impact.
Well, I'm probably causing a Twitter storm that you'll have to deal with the most of, but I think we do a pretty good job of staying objective. I mean, I'm very honest. I've disliked Trump my entire adult life. But when he does something right, I give him credit. There haven't been a whole lot of instances of that. Sometimes I've prematurely given him credit. And one of the things I prematurely gave him credit for was his having direct conversations with North Korea, which for a while looked like they were going badly and then looked like they were going very well. And he actually had, when he was calling Kim Jong-un little rocket man, I thought leaders using high school, schoolyard bully names to talk about other world leaders is fundamentally really fucked up. But they did have some face-to-face talks and they did their, press, whatever. And it looked like we might be heading towards denuclearizing and maybe even bringing some stability to North Korea. That has not been the case, but the news coming out of North Korea now is there are reports out there that Kim Jong-un might be very sick.
No, there's reports out there that he is dead. Like, I mean,
anything credible? I've only seen he's sick and we don't know.
No, I've seen from two different places that, they're, and it's all going back to one source, which is a news outlet that comes out of Hong Kong, that they're reporting that he's dead. Now, no one's been able to verify or vet that story, and I haven't seen it come from anywhere else. It's just, so I have no idea. And I mean, trying to get the truth on this is way above our pay grade.
Sure.
But
Seth Rogen and James Franco or whoever was in that movie to find that out.
I don't know. We don't know, and something could be breaking on this as we're talking right now. But it's interesting to see what impact that would have. I mean, like Kim Jong-un, yes, he is a dictator to the nth degree, but there are other people below him who, there are people who have grown up in with the Uns, with him and his dad. And
the Kims, technically.
Right, or yeah, the Kims. Sorry, I get that all backwards. But there's people who have been with them this entire ride who are just as maniacal, just as devious, just as, that would be just as bad dictators as, as a Kim himself, whoever is in line to take over. So some people see that, maybe there's an opening here to get into North Korea, maybe, or maybe things that stay just as they are, or things could theoretically get worse because we don't know who's over there. But I know there are some other bad actors that are in the mix there that can make things, that can keep things the same or make them worse.
Well, so I've heard that he has only one, and I'm now going off of information that I will not say is vetted because I read this on a Facebook post. So, but I've heard from that the only person in his family that is involved with his regime is his sister, and that she might be next, which would be pretty atypical for South Korea or North Korean dictatorships. So.
I have no idea.
All right. Anyway, In a way, I shouldn't have said that because I don't know it to be true, but it is something I read and I'm curious about. But the hope that his sister is suddenly going to be some enlightened, I care more about the people, well-adjusted person is not a good bet. when Kim Jong-il, his father, died, I read some stories and they said that, you know, Kim Jong-un went to college in the UK. And, you know, I thought, hey, maybe this kid will know what his dad was doing was nuts. And when he comes into power, things will get better. Or not.
Negative Ghost Rider.
Exactly. Or he's going to be a second generation pampered dictator who's been, you know, carried around in a golden chariot his whole life while his population starves, and he's going to make things worse and threaten nuclear war, which is what we turned out getting. But if, I mean, if it...
Listen, I think we have to, the first thing to figure out is Kim Jong-un alive? If he's alive, what's his health? Like, you know, how healthy is he? Is he on the verge of death? Can he recover? And then if he does die or he has died, then who's in line? And then what is it that they want? How do they see North Korea's future? Do they want to continue as is? Or are they willing to come to the table to receive, you know, to get rid of some of the sanctions, you know, denuclearize and become more involved in the rest of the world and not having to go, you know, backdoor black market through Russia, China, and, you know, some of the bad actors that are out there. That I think that remains to be seen, and to comment really any more about it, it, you know, doesn't really do us any good.
Well, I mean, true, but destabilizing an already unstable place is always dangerous. And one thing I'd like to do, just sort of tie the whole thing in a bow, is you made multiple points today about how there's this echo chamber on the left and echo chamber on the right. In North Korea, there's one echo chamber.
Right.
And it's all from the administration.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm sure there are people who get black market internet and see that the world around them is a better place than how they're being treated in their home country. But, you know, there are people out there in that country who don't know anything other than Kim Jong-un is the son of Kim Jong-il, who are descended from the gods.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, I might jokingly say there's people here who think Trump is a god. No one actually thinks that.
Well, be careful, because there are some literally insane people who consider Trump to be a deity. It's crazy. Right, they're on the fringe. It's a small minority. You know, maybe it's 100 people, which is 100 people too fucking many. But
fair.
That you know, I digress from what we're talking about. No, you're right. There are, I mean, it's a really, North Korea is a complicated thing, because if they were to come to the table and say, all right, here's everything. Here's our nuclear weapons. We'll get rid of all of it. We don't want to see our people starving and dying anymore. Okay, that's great. But the problem is, you have a people who all they've known their entire life is starvation, you know, barely getting by on what the government provides for them. They, you know, not being able to say anything. They have no access to anything. They don't know what the outside world is like. They live in fear of just being kind of taken, whether in broad daylight or in the night, and, you know, being horribly abused and killed. I mean he's killed people, right, with rockets and, you know, awful torture methods and things like that. So it's, you know, yeah, the level of trauma, like, I mean, like, one of the first thing I think you would need to do is flood that place with people who speak Korean, who are therapists and social workers, you know, just to kind of get to deal with
food.
Yeah. Yeah. With food and water and doctors and everything else. Like, there's a huge social aspect that needs to be resolved in North Korea before you can even really start to think about, you know, rebuilding the infrastructure.
I mean, to undo what has been done is going to be a monumental challenge, whether or not it happens in our lifetimes or not.
And the United States needs to be careful with taking that on, right? I mean, like, because here's the deal. We have done a piss poor job of nation building, right? We can go in and we can tear down a country with the best of them, but the idea that we actually know what the hell to do once we rip you apart, we haven't done it.
You're just saying that because it's been true for the last 80 years without an exception.
Right. So
Other than that, you got nothing.
Right. I mean, I mean, you also have China to contend with, because us going in and saying, okay, we're gonna get North Korea back on their feet, there's no way that China feels comfortable with that, with their proximity to North Korea. And so how does that impact our relationship with them, with the amount of debt that we have with them? There's a lot that would go into this if it so happens that Kim Jong-un passes away or has passed away, and whoever replaces him is a reasonable human being, right? There's a lot of ifs, ands, buts, and nuts in there. So I don't know.
And so we can close this out with one point. I made a wisecrack about freedom of speech earlier, but what we're doing right now is freedom of speech. If we said the stuff about Kim Jong-un in North Korea, we would not be able, if we had said it for the first time today, we would be in custody by now.
Dead by now.
They might throw us in a cell for a couple days and then kill us. Maybe. But anyway, the fact is, though, I'm doing this stuff without doing anything to hide my identity or, mask what I'm saying. And I feel no fear from the government.
We openly criticize the President of the United States. We criticize his behavior, his decision-making, all those sort of things, right? Called him names or whatever it might be, and we live in no fear of someone kicking down our door and taking us to jail or killing us because of it. And that's freedom of speech, and that's an amazing, wonderful, beautiful thing that the people in North Korea have never experienced in any way, shape, or form.
Correct. And it's hard for us to relate to that, right?
No, we can't. It's not hard. We can't relate.
Right.
We can't. We just can't. And I mean, I just see the way that people, I'm a firm believer, which, it's hard to say it with a straight face, but I'm a firm believer in respecting the office of the president. Now, Trump has made that hard to say because of some of the things that he's done. But I still believe that that's necessary. I think, the way that some of the media treats him, I shake my head. You're not helping anything by behaving this way. But I recognize why they're doing it because of the position that he puts the media in. I think that they could do a better job, but I think they're doing the job that they have to do. But I could not imagine living in a place where he could then turn around and say, oh, you're criticizing me? Well, you're dead. You're going to jail and no one's ever going to see you again. And we may not kill you, but we might as well. That's something that none of us can imagine. Most of us haven't experienced unless you've been, captured in a war zone somewhere. That's a great thing. You can have all the complaints that we want about this country, but just the freedoms that we have, which, people are, protesting in the streets about being asked to stay home and not spread a disease that's causing a lot of people harm, where you've got access to TV and the internet and you can do shit like we're doing right now. You can go outside, you can go play, you can do all these things. People think that they're making you, some of these people, you would believe we were living in North Korea. It's insane. And I think we do need to be careful. We do need to watch what the government's doing. We need to be aware of what they're trying to control in this particular situation. And we need to make sure that as a people, that once we get the situation resolved, that we don't give up any rights and that we're not saying that, since that we had a pandemic and it was so bad, we have to give up all these enumerated rights. No, fuck that. No, I mean, it's just this sucked, but we need to figure out how to fight pandemics, but I'm not giving up rights to do so. And go ahead.
Jim, so one thing that's been flying around mostly in the right-wing media that I follow is people getting tested for the antibodies and basically being given papers that say, I've been tested for the antibodies, I have the antibodies, therefore I am neither contagious nor susceptible to this virus, and I get different rights than other people who either haven't been tested or have tested negative. I understand the logic behind that, but conceptually, there's a lot of scary things in there. Anytime you got to carry around papers, I think Nazi.
I think slavery, but I mean,
slavery, they didn't give you papers and say you can do whatever you want. If
you were black, you had to have papers to say that you were legally free. Otherwise, they took your ass. Even if you had them, they would still take you back into slavery. Come on, bone up, bro.
Well, okay, but
there's no let's just move on.
I didn't know they made freed slaves carry papers, but I do know that.
How do you not know that?
Well, because I thought they just if you were black in the South, they assumed you were a slave, and if you're black in the North, they assumed you weren't.
No.
Okay.
Well, no, I mean, like, first of all, everyone just assumed that you were a slave. Like, you had to have papers to prove it because of the plantation owners would send bounty hunters from the South to the North, and the only thing that a freed slave could do is he had to have papers to prove that he didn't run away and he was actually legally freed. And even still, it didn't always matter.
Okay, I'm certainly not going to fence with you on this. So yeah, but. Okay, carrying papers to be allowed to do stuff is a bad look,
whether it's Nazi or whether it's Nazi Germany or, you know, right here in our own backyard, it is the connotation is very, very negative. And I don't like that either. I'm not sure the value of it. And now coming out of our own state, Dr. Amy Acton, she stepped in it when she said, quote, "It would be my dream for us to have something like that here in Ohio." I'm like, what are you doing? Like, how, you know, and that's just, I don't believe that Dr. Amy Acton is a fan of the Nazi regime. I think that she didn't realize what she was saying. You know, and with it just being Ohio and it's a much smaller platform than Trump, it kind of got stepped over. But I mean, that was a bad look by her. It's just that idea of you got to have papers. I don't like it either.
I mean, I just stepped in it, and Amy Acton has probably had a more privileged life than I have, so that she could not catch the vibe of it, I understand. Again, to me, I don't like it. And you know, it's the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? I mean,
exactly.
It might seem like a good thing to do now, and then next time it's, well, for this reason, you have to be, you know, carrying out papers to prove you're not whatever.
This isn't the first time it's been floated around. I mean, like, they were doing that in, what, New Mexico and Arizona, prove that they weren't illegal immigrants, and it's just
very aggressively.
Right. I mean, it's just like, and who are you stopping? Obviously, you're not going to stop the average-looking white guy. And generally, you know, I mean, this is the one time that black people kind of got a pass. It's just like, well, I mean, you're here, so... you know, but it was a bad look, and
truthfully, New York had or still has possibly stop and frisk, which was not the same. It's not the same as show me your papers, but it is the same as I decided I'm suspicious of you, so I'm patting you down, and that is
The whole stop.
I don't think I heard of it.
No, they first of all, no, they didn't get rid of it. De Blasio has come out and made a big stance that he has gotten rid of it. You know, he's fought with the police union. It's still happening in New York. It's not as pronounced as it was, but they still do it.
All right. They're just not bragging about it anymore.
Yeah, now they're not blasting it out there as it being the end-all be-all. It's definitely the idea. Now, you got to put ideas out there. We have to think things through, but we, you know, if as a person in a position of power, as an administrator, you just, you know, the one thing you have to do, the one thing our coach would say back in the day is you got to play the whole thing through. You know, he would talk to us about when we make decisions, when we go out and we're not around the coaching staff and the team, like, hey, before you do something stupid, you got to play the whole tape through and see how this thing ends. So, you know, if you're a politician or you're a leader and you go out and you're about to just throw an idea out there as fast as you can, you got to think, all right, what am I about to say? How can this be perceived? Is there any danger of blowback? And, you know, should I switch gears really quickly? And it just seems like we have a lot of people in a position in these positions that aren't doing that.
Right.
I don't necessarily, I get the situation, like this is unprecedented. So people are in very unfamiliar deep water and, you know, they're just swimming to survive. So I'm not going to completely kill Dr. Amy Acton. That's why I'm giving Trump a little bit of leeway, but with great power comes, you know, great responsibility. And he needs to do better. And I hope that it's true that this, that, you know, he's going to talk less and step out of the forefront and let everybody else until do the talking until we get this thing figured out.
I got called Peter Parker for saying that same thing a couple years ago on our show. So Peter, with great power comes with great power comes great responsibility. Spider-Man, come on.
That's true. Yes, it's in Spider-Man. But
All right. So can we break away from politics because the NFL draft is going on?
Yeah, absolutely.
We got to hang out a little bit on round one, which is fun to do because neither of us had anything to really get in. You know, you're a Steelers fan. They didn't have a first-round pick. I'm a Bills fan. They didn't have a first-round pick. So it was kind of fun to just sort of sit back and see what happened without really getting stressed out or worked up, which maybe you don't do, but during the draft I do. I can get sucked in for hours watching the stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely get sucked in. I definitely get I definitely get hyped up about it. I mean, I like the Steelers draft pick with Claypool from out of Notre Dame. He's a big, rangy receiver. He's 6'4", 235, runs a 4.4. He's got really good hands. Just a big body that you could use on the outside to contest balls. I like the pick. I was hoping for J.K. Dobbins. I was hoping for Jonathan Stewart there, Jonathan Taylor. But you know, we didn't go that route. Last year we drafted a running back, you know, in the third or fourth round, Benny Snell out of Kentucky. We also have, James Conner. So Terminator.
John Conner.
I wish we had John
Conner. Draft Peter Parker.
But
you can catch anything.
We got a big rangy receiver out of it, and I guess my question is, do we really need him? But with an athlete like that, you know, he reminds me of a Mike Evans down in Tampa Bay, you know, just with good speed and good size, who you hope that early on you just say, hey, you know, run down the field, we'll try to do some stuff in the middle of the field, and with Juju Smith-Schuster to draw attention away from you, you know, you hope he gets one-on-one coverage with someone smaller than him. You throw the ball up and you get a big play out of it. I love the draft. Part of it is I get really excited for the young men. It's just like you have to, you know, I mean, like this is life-changing experience for these guys. A lot of these guys have grown up poor. They've grown up in really tough situations with ESPN is making sure that they highlight anyone who's had anything terrible happen in their life. ESPN and the NFL Network are telling us all about it. But – I mean, it's great to see, you know, I mean, it's changing these men's lives, their families. And I just, because I'm a big football fan, I love the idea of breaking this down, as a player who, you know, played at a high level, who really, got to experience playing against this level of competition. There's a lot of connection there for me. So, I mean, this is always a really fun few days.
And I'm just your typical super fan, I guess, but I just get into this. This year obviously has been so weird because it's all being done remotely.
Yeah.
So I want to know how, like every typically player gets drafted. First thing they do, they put on a ball cap from the team that drafted them, and that's happening again. And I'm really curious as to how they're making that happen.
So I've learned a couple of things just listening to, you know, the NFL Network and a few people interviewed who are involved with the process. One, so Verizon came through and sent people these entire setups. So you see the guys with the Bose headphones and the cameras are, you know, phones. I don't know what type of phones, but they're set up with like a selfie camera. With the ring around it, and they Verizon sent all that stuff out. So that's how you have access into everybody's homes. Bose came through with the headphones so the guys can, you know, kind of filter out all the noise and then hear the team when they call, which those are really nice headphones, which most of these guys will be able to afford on their own, but it was nice for Bose to be able to give those out. In terms of the hats, the league sent out hats to most of the guys. Now, they didn't send all 32, but they did send they did send a good number of hats to each guy if the guy wanted them.
Okay, and just one of these are the most likely teams to take you. I mean, the NFL can afford 32 hats for 32 guys if they need it.
Right. I mean, so a bit more than 32 guys.
Well, it's for the first round. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, they're still.
Are they still doing it? Okay.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. We're still looking in on people's houses. Although, if that were me, if I'm not going,
I've been dedicated to the show. I have not. I've walked away from the draft. I have no information coming through.
No, I'm looking at it right over my.
I know you are. You suck.
If that were me, I would not want them in my unless I'm going in the top 10. I don't want to be at the draft. I don't want anybody. I don't want. Just let me know I was drafted, and we'll pre-film something. And I don't have the emotional capacity.
Yeah, so you don't like getting caught in emotional moments.
Yeah, not at all.
And again, for these kids, it is almost without a doubt the biggest day of their lives. So real quick, you want to talk to Jalen Hurts? I know we're getting up against it on time.
Yeah, we'll talk Jalen Hurts, and I got one other thing about the draft, and then we'll jump out. So, Jalen Hurts, so he ends up going to Philadelphia, which I thought was interesting because I thought that he was a potential landing spot would be in Pittsburgh. You know, Ben Roethlisberger is getting older. I think realistically he probably has another two seasons, three seasons left total, this one and then maybe two more with two of those.
Unless he trips on his beard.
Okay. I think he's got three seasons left, probably two being really effective, and then kind of his swan song last season. But either way, you're going to have to find his replacement. Mason Rudolph didn't really blow a lot of people away last year. And so I thought that, Jalen Hurts would be a good fit because he's athletic. He's got, he's relatively accurate and he's got a strong enough arm where, he can develop into a really effective guy at the pro level. When you look at what a guy like Lamar Jackson is doing, when you look at what Russell Wilson is doing, Kyler Murray was able to be effective. You just look at guys who are athletic like Jalen Hurts, and Jalen Hurts was a really good player for, every time he was on the field. He had one bad half of football where, Nick Saban pulls him and then replaces him with Tua Tagovailoa, and, that ends up, being this defining moment for Tua's career, and Jalen Hurts is kind of pushed to the side. Now, he stayed at Alabama. The following season, ends up coming in for Tua when Tua got hurt, ends up being really effective, and they win. And then he transfers, goes to Oklahoma, gets them to the college football playoffs this year, where they ended up losing to Alabama. No, LSU, I'm sorry.
LSU, there we go.
Yeah. LSU,
Alabama. Yeah, Joe Burrow, geez. Yeah.
I like him as a player. And I like his skill set, and him going to Philly, it makes a lot of sense because Carson Wentz can't stay healthy. Carson Wentz is a pretty good quarterback, but he can't stay healthy. And I like Doug Peterson. I like their system over there. I think that we know he's going to be coached well. And so he's going to get good coaching. He's going to be behind a guy, Carson Wentz, who I think Carson Wentz is a good guy and will help him along. So if and when Carson Wentz goes down, Jalen Hurts goes in the game, he gets exposure. But then when his rookie contract is up, I think that there's going to be a market for Jalen Hurts, if he gets an opportunity.
Right. Well, I heard someone on ESPN said that they're going to use him like New Orleans uses Taysom Hill. You got an athletic quarterback who you can do things with out of the shotgun on running plays, and have them pull up and throw. You can split them out wide. You can just throw a whole bunch of different things at other teams. And Doug Peterson has shown creativity. But I was shocked that Philly drafted him where they did just because they do have Carson Wentz, who they did sign to a monster contract. And this shows that I think the Eagles brain trust has plans for a guy with that, diverse skill set. So
I don't agree with any of that at all, actually. Okay. I mean, Jalen Hurts is good with the ball in his hands, when he's running out of the pocket. But they may try to mix him in there a little bit. I don't think you'll see much of it. And he's a little bit different than Taysom Hill. He's more of a will Jalen Hurts do anything that they ask him to do? Absolutely. But Jalen Hurts is a quarterback, right? He's not a receiver. He's not a running back. You know, the gadget sort of plays that you're talking about, I mean, in reality, they're usually not that overly effective. Is it worth throwing him out there just to add a wrinkle to give teams to plan and defend? Maybe. I don't know. I don't buy that. I think that that's kind of NFL coach speak. I think that the guy is a quarterback. And I think that what Philly learned is that you have to have a very good backup ready to go because Nick Foles won them the Super Bowl, right? And then Nick Foles had to come in and he almost got him back there again. All of this happened during Carson Wentz's tenure while Carson Wentz was playing really well but ended up getting injured, right? And so I think that they lost Nick Foles and they realized that they need someone who they don't have to completely rearrange the playbook for if and when Wentz goes down. And I think that that's why you bring in a guy like Jalen Hurts. You pick him at that level because you know that he's a guy who – with the right coaching and tutelage, he can come in and he can play for you right away. And so the whole thing that they're going to use him all these different ways, I don't think, will they throw him out there on a play where they line him up wide and maybe try to do some sort of flea flicker thing where he reverse pass where he ends up throwing the ball? Maybe. But I think if you do see him out there, it'll be under center or it'll be in the shotgun where it'll just be something different just to kind of get him some exposure because they think that he's – you know, a good quarterback who will take snaps for them in the near future.
We'll see. I think they are drafting him to be a quarterback. I completely agree with that. But I think when you've got Carson Wentz and you've spent all that money on Wentz, that's not, you know, you to your point need to be prepared for him to go down because he's not been the healthiest guy. You also want to make use of your third round pick as soon as possible.
Why?
And because you spent a third-round pick on him.
Okay, but the reality is, how often do third-round picks start right away? The percentage isn't good. I'll just tell you, the percentage isn't high. Like, third-round picks are valuable, and third-round picks eventually do get on the field for you, but you're not drafting a third-round pick thinking that that person's going to be a starter, right?
Well, you don't draft a quarterback in the third round and expect him to be your franchise guy.
Okay, that's fine, but I at no point did I say that they thought he was going to be a franchise, right? I mean, he's a guy who takes coaching, who can, you know, who's athletic, who's smart, who can be coached into someone who, if they need him to step in, can maybe eventually develop into a guy that someone wants to pay down the road, you know, when his rookie contract is up.
Well, and I mean, to your point, he literally changed programs entirely and went straight to being a starting quarterback and took a second team to the playoffs. So his college resume is spectacular. I'll be curious to see which one of us ends up being right here. I wish we'd bookmark this and fast forward to October, November, because we really won't know until then. I want to throw in one other thing. So you got to do some Steelers talk. When we were hanging out for the first round of the draft, I was telling you how much I hoped Chase Claypool would fall to the Bills pick at number 54 overall. When the Steelers drafted him, I sent you a text message with a thumbs down because I couldn't find the middle finger emoji.
I found it funny.
Yeah, you did. Thank you. And sent it right back in increased font in case you think I didn't notice that. But anyway, I'm actually really happy with what the Bills have done. I think A.J. Epinosa, defensive end out of Iowa, was a logical choice. Again, not my first choice, but I'm not a professional general manager. That kid plays hard, and it illustrates to me how dumb sports fans can be, especially when there's nothing else going on in your life and we have social media. There are people already saying Epinosa is a bust, and I'm like, fuck it, stop it.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely can't. The Steeler fandom, you know, has kind of been mixed, but it's been relatively tame for the most part. A lot of people are happy with the Claypool pick. I mean, the kid is just like the potential for him is off the charts. It's although there's some frustration, and I have the same frustration with, you know, we're not going to have mini camps. We don't know what You know, the training camp situation is going to look like. So, you know, a guy like him, I don't know what his level of effectiveness will be early on, because he's really not going to have enough. You know, I don't know what his ability to learn the offense is going to be. So he may be a guy who really we're only able to use in red zone situations and on special teams next year. And we still don't know what the fucking season is going to look like. You know, I mean,
true.
We don't have a vaccine.
Which is the craziest part, right?
Right. I mean, without that, there's just so much up in the air. So, the one thing I do want to throw out there though is with this draft, you know, there were a couple scenes with girlfriends girlfriends who maybe overstepped their bounds a little bit. CeeDee Lamb, when he got picked up by the Cowboys, you know, his girlfriend, we're assuming it's his girlfriend, she goes and grabs his phone. He snatched it back with the "what the fuck are you doing" face, which I just thought was hilarious. And I said, man, she is going to end up, that whole thing is going to end up all over the internet. And it is.
I haven't seen it.
But. Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, we're in different Twitter circles, but trust me, it's there. And then, you know, there was another guy, a lineman, who his girlfriend was like sitting on his lap, and, you know, and a lot of these, she was like all over him, and then his mom literally snatched her off of his lap, you know, and gave her a very stern talking to on air. And
that's awesome.
The look on his face, he needed the Curb Your Enthusiasm music like playing as this played out. You know, because his mom had to tug, because she was a bigger girl, right? And mom was a bigger girl. So you had these two healthy women pulling and tugging. And then, you know, the off camera, but you could see the mom's hand, you know, moving in the camera. It was just, it's funny to watch.
If that is your wish, that is a wish that will come true. There will be a meme with, or there will be a video with the Curb Your Enthusiasm music playing to that scene. Soon.
I'm counting on it. It just, you know, I mean, which is, you know, and I think there's even a comedian, Ryan Davis, who's already kind of jumped all over it and just said, listen, you know, for these girls, you got to understand that, you know, this is the player's moment. And these girls are trying to, you know, they're making sure that everybody sees that they're, you know, out in front. But, you know, Ryan Davis, he's just like, listen, you guys are focusing on the wrong thing. The women you guys are worried about aren't watching the draft. They're waiting for these guys' contracts to come through to see what the signing bonuses look like. They're trying to figure out where these guys are going to live. Like, they're going to prey on your man in a whole different arena. You know, so there's no reason to make yourself known, you know, while the guy's being drafted in his big moment. You know, which is just, it's funny, man. I mean, I would have loved to have had the opportunity to get drafted, but that is, you know, trying to figure out the girlfriend situation at that point, you know. It's just, you know, I couldn't imagine it, because my whole thing would be like, all right, well, now I'm single and she's
so, that's the old guy graduates from medical school. She's like, I dated you from medical school because I wanted to marry a doctor. I became a doctor so I could move up on the dating scale.
Well, that's a little.
Which is actually a Seinfeld episode.
Yes. All right. Right. Before we get too much more misogynistic and asshole-y, we'll go ahead and shut it down. Anything else?
At Whiskey Congress on social media, Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email him, Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email me. Thanks for listening. And we're not going to say stay safe out there. That's implied, but everyone's ending every fucking conversation with that. And it's frankly starting to get on my nerves.
All right, man.
Later, man. Good talking to you.